This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Wednesday, April 21st. I'm Julia Caulfield. In today's headlines, public health discusses COVID restrictions for the summer, search and rescue respond to ski and hiking incidents, the scientific benefits of getting outside, and a mountain weather forecast. San Miguel County is preparing for what COVID public health orders will look like this summer. Earlier this month, the state of Colorado dissolved the formal dial system, shifting what were restrictions to recommendations. The county's current public health order is in place through the end of April, with San Miguel in level blue from the state's COVID dial. According to San Miguel County Public Health Director Grace Franklin, she anticipates staying in level blue for the remainder of the month. But she says health orders could loosen as we move into May.
By the end of May, we'll have the majority of our adult population vaccinated, and school will have concluded by the end of May as well. If we stick to the dial framework with the anticipation of level green and masks being maintained, that will really successfully help our students stay in school and prepare for the summer.
She notes after May, it's still too early to make clear decisions on what public health orders should look like.
So I would recommend just doing a 30-day reassess and check in at the end or mid-May to really see where we're at, where the rest of the state is at, and what's going on.
Franklin notes there will still need to be guidance for larger events to keep spread low as people group or cluster. She adds masks will likely be required further into the summer. To that point, Dr. Jeffrey Coker, a local epidemiologist and advisor to the public health department, says he highly supports continued mask use, especially indoors. But if people are outside, he says San Miguel County can relax a bit more.
We shouldn't be afraid of the outdoor gatherings. This virus does not spread in outdoor situations to any significant degree, and it certainly doesn't cause super spreader events. So I think our guidance should be indoor masking, but as far as the idea of outdoor masking for everybody to festival constantly, A, they're not going to pay attention to it, and B, it really is unnecessary.
But Franklin still urges caution.
The tricky part is indoor-outdoor activities, right, where it starts outdoors and then it gets a little bit monkeyed. So I do want to agree and acknowledge that. But then how can we help protect in these unique scenarios where people will be prolonged and in close contact with unknowns?
As we head into the second summer of COVID, Franklin says San Miguel County is in a position to continue forward with less restrictive measures, especially as more people are vaccinated.
We know that vaccines are the pathway out of here, right, and out of these pandemic policies. So at some point, there's going to have to be that moment of, from a policy perspective, letting it go. But the herd immunity concept is so nebulous that I love the proceed slowly and act with caution, but also try and be realistic on both ends of the spectrum.
County Commissioner Lance Waring adds that cautious relaxation may be easier said than done.
Now we're faced with how to ramp down in a way that is sensible and cautious, but not overly so. And I think that's going to be a challenge for us. We've had over a year of very difficult restrictions on our day-to-day lives, and it's in a strange way almost hard to let go of that.
According to Franklin, San Miguel County can expect to stick with the state's COVID dial system through May, hopefully dropping to level green. The Board of County Commissioners and Public Health Department plans to reassess and discuss what the rest of the summer could look like next month. San Miguel County Search and Rescue conducted two missions this week, rescuing a skier and a hiker in separate incidents. On Tuesday, deputies received a report of a skier with injuries in the Wilson Peak area. According to the San Miguel County Sheriff's Office, a 37-year-old New Mexico man was skiing the north face of Wilson Peak with a friend. The man fell near the top and tumbled roughly 2,000 vertical feet, landing out of sight from his friend. Search and rescue used air resources to reach the man, who was flown to the Telluride Airport and transferred by ambulance to the Telluride Regional Medical Center. The sheriff's office says he sustained multiple traumatic but non-life-threatening injuries. His friend was also brought to the airport and was uninjured. In total, the rescue mission required a dozen rescuers and took approximately 5 hours. The day before, on Monday, dispatchers received a call from an out-of-state woman who said her son was injured after a fall while hiking. According to the sheriff's office, the woman didn't know where her son was hiking, but deputies were able to locate the 22-year-old man on a hillside north of Sawpit. A group of rescuers and medics hiked into the area and hiked the man down through relatively difficult terrain. The man was then transferred to an ambulance and taken to the Telluride Regional Medical Center with minor injuries. Go for a hike, a bike ride, a trip down a river, and most of us just feel better. But why? In her book, The Nature Fix, Why Nature Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Creative, author Florence Williams looks to answer that question. Williams will be part of a virtual discussion on Thursday, April 22nd, Earth Day, to talk about the book. KOTO News spoke with Williams about her book and research last summer. The following is a rebroadcast of that discussion. Hey, Florence, thanks for taking the time to chat with me today.
Hi, Julia. Thanks for having me.
You're going to be part of a virtual book discussion talking about your book, The Nature Fix. Can you share a little bit about what the book and your research is about?
I was really interested in the science behind why people tend to feel so good when they're outside. So why does it make us happier and healthier and more creative when we spend time in green space? You know, I think a lot of us know this intuitively, but it turns out that there's a lot of sort of mounting scientific evidence for it. And I was really intrigued by that.
You mentioned that many people feel like they know this is true, even if they don't have the science behind it. Was there anything that surprised you throughout your research?
Yeah, there was. I mean, I knew that, you know, being outside sort of, you know, put me in a better mood and that I got a lot of good ideas, you know, when I was out sort of hiking or biking or strolling or skiing. But I was more surprised by the research showing that being outside actually makes us better people. There's kind of this new science of awe, you know, A-W-E, awe, and science of beauty, showing that when we feel part of the larger natural world, we also feel more connected to human communities. And that surprised me and interested me. And there was some sort of interesting laboratory research showing this. Like, for example, when people are shown photographs of, you know, mountaintops or whales breaching in the ocean, as opposed to looking at photographs of a shopping mall, for example, they seem to work better in groups and their ego sort of shrinks. You know, and it makes sense if you think about how you feel, for example, when you look at the Milky Way, right? You feel sort of tiny. You feel less significant. And it turns out that feeling, that sort of humility, is really, really good for humans. It just makes us actually better in civilization.
For those of us who live in the mountains, this can seem quite easy to be out in nature. How do you see this fitting in for folks who maybe don't have that kind of access to nature or wilderness?
Yeah, thanks for asking that, because I really think that's sort of the critical question of our century. You know, more humans around the planet live in cities now. And we really have to figure out the answers to those questions if we really believe that exposure to nature makes us better people and makes us happier, which I do. And so that became a really central question in my book. And personally, it was of interest to me because I moved from Colorado to Washington, D.C., which is part of why I wanted to write this book. You know, I felt like I had lost something. I wanted to know how to get it back. And so through the research in this book, I really started to understand the ways that we can kind of optimize our sort of cultivation of beauty and our exposure to green space. A lot of cities in the United States have pretty great parks and have pretty great green space, but it's not evenly distributed. You know, it's really access to nature has become an environmental and social justice issue. So, you know, my city, Washington, D.C., you can actually see poverty from space because you can see the neighborhoods that don't have the trees and you can see the neighborhoods that do have the trees and the green schools and the green parks. And so I think this is going to be a really fundamental challenge as we move forward as a culture, as a civilization, and as a globe.
Do you have any ideas of how we start addressing those societal and social justice issues when it comes to access to nature?
Yeah, I do. And fortunately, a lot of great people are thinking about this. You know, it's a question for urban planners. It's a question for school districts. It's certainly a question for families. And what I've ultimately concluded is that it doesn't really work if you put sort of pressure on parents to send their kids outside more or to be outside more with their kids. I mean, that's a nice idea, but it's not going to work unless you remove other barriers to access to nature. So it's really an institutional problem as well as sort of an individual family issue.
Even if you love spending as much time outside as possible with busy work schedules and lives, it can be difficult. Do you have any tips or suggestions how people can integrate these ideas into their everyday?
Yeah, I think it's a mistake to think that we have to kind of do a big expedition in the wilderness, you know, in order to get meaningful nature exposure. One thing I've learned through writing this book is that even as little as 15 minutes of being outside in nature can actually change our nervous systems. It can kind of slow our heart rate. It can reduce our stress hormones, and it can put us in a better mood as well, sort of make us feel a little more, you know, vital and creative. That's 15 minutes. So I really encourage people to start small and to go small. You know, if that's what you can do, then by all means, it's still worth it to make time for it.
Florence, thank you for taking the time to chat with me today.
You're so welcome, Julia. Thanks for having me.
That was Florence Williams, author of The Nature Fix. The Telluride Mountain School will be hosting a virtual book discussion with Williams on Thursday, April 22nd at 9:30 a.m. The event is open to the public. To register, go to TellurideMTNSchool.org. With spring break wrapped up and more San Miguel County residents back from travel, the San Miguel County Public Health Department is urging residents to get tested for COVID-19. Public Health encourages residents who travel and are not fully vaccinated to get tested 5 days after returning home. San Miguel County Public Health Director Grace Franklin notes she expects to see an increase of cases once people return back from travel. She says if residents choose not to get tested, they still need to be cautious when they return home.
And so really the success of any disease that may have increased or occurred during the spring break period to being able to level that out and manage it is people's willingness to stay home, isolate if they're feeling symptomatic, and minimizing interactions with folks for 7 to 10 days after returning.
Public Health has added testing dates in the coming days. There will be testing in Norwood at the Pig Palace on Thursday, April 22nd from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Telluride Regional Airport on Friday, April 23rd from 2 to 6 p.m. and in Lawson from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Monday, April 26th. The testing is free. Registration is available at bit.ly/smccovidtesting. Starting a business takes more than just a great idea. Like it or not, money is an important piece in the game. That's why the Telluride Venture Network, formerly the Telluride Venture Accelerator, is hosting an investment boot camp to help startups looking for investment. According to TVN, the bootcamp will focus on companies based in the Telluride Western Slope region, specifically, and Colorado more generally. The bootcamp will be a hybrid of in-person and virtual events running from June 24th to July 8th, with a demo day at the Nugget Theater. Applications for the bootcamp will be accepted on a rolling basis from now until May 31st and are available at f6.com/TVA2021investment. Black lawmakers in Colorado are thankful and relieved. A jury convicted a former Minneapolis police officer for the murder of George Floyd. The Capitol was tense an hour before the verdict was read, as every car was cleared from the parking lot in case of unrest. Moments after the conviction, six Black lawmakers hugged and said a prayer, expressing thanks for the verdict. Leslie Harrod leads the Black Caucus.
We do praise God for this outcome today. But make no mistake, true justice would be George Floyd alive today.
That's right.
Too many people have died that have not received such justice, that have not received a guilty verdict.
Harrod led efforts to pass police reforms in response to Floyd's murder, and she says the work continues. Colorado lawmakers began debating a bill on Wednesday, aiming to further limit when police can use deadly force. The measure would only allow it as a last resort, after nonviolent methods fail. It would also make it easier for residents to sue state law enforcement officers. The bill is one of several police reforms Democratic lawmakers are advancing almost a year after George Floyd's murder. Other Colorado reforms include limiting the use of chemical restraints like ketamine and adding whistleblower protections for officers. After issuing almost 400 executive orders related to the coronavirus, Governor Jared Polis is starting to hand over some of his pandemic response powers to cities and counties. KOTO's Scott Franz spoke with the governor about this new phase of the pandemic and about his early response to another crisis, the March 22nd mass shooting in his hometown of Boulder.
We're entering a new phase of the pandemic where local governments are getting more control over what restrictions are in place. But you recently warned that the state is experiencing a fourth wave of cases. Do you think now is still the right time to switch to this local control system?
Well, the fourth wave is different than the other waves because what we're seeing is record low numbers of hospitalizations of people in their 60s and 70s and 80s that have the worst outcomes. But we're seeing hospitalizations go up for people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. And it's typically shorter stays and better outcomes. Still, even at that age, not everybody makes it, which is tragic. But it's just a very different situation than when we had the much higher mortality rates of people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. What's really important is that people get vaccinated. I mean, that will protect you. We're at close to 40% of adults that are vaccinated now. And especially for those who are vaccinated, they can have the confidence to go back out and relax a little. For those who haven't yet, you know, now, it, you know, the virus is still very prevalent. Wear a mask, avoid socializing with people outside of your home, and just get vaccinated.
You've predicted we'll have a relatively normal summer based on the vaccination rates. You know, has anything that's happened in the last few weeks with rising case numbers, with the pause on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, has anything changed your outlook yet for what our summer is going to look like?
Well, I'm still hopeful, and what everything we're hearing is that Johnson & Johnson pause will only be about a week. If it lingers, if that pause goes 3, 4, 5 weeks, it will delay the state by a week or two in getting through everybody. So I'm, as long as we get that back in the next week or so, and it's safe and effective, and it's one shot, it's preferred by a lot of people, as long as we get that back soon, I don't think I think it's just a hiccup in the road, and it doesn't delay our vaccinated by mid to late May. But if it lingers for a few weeks, it could push that back to early June.
Another question that comes to mind, you know, it's been a month now since the tragic shooting in Boulder. Do you think the state legislature here in Colorado needs to take any more action on gun policy this session beyond the two bills they've already sent you?
Of course, if there's any other bills that reach my desk, I'll take a look at them. I know there's certainly discussions about other things that could be done on mental health, on gun safety.
But do you personally have any thoughts on policies that might need to be done?
You can certainly learn from, you know, each incident. And part of the problem is you're always correcting for the last incident. And then the next one comes at you from a different corner. But in the case of the Pink Super shooting, it would have been a great example of how we could have used our red flag law, our extreme risk protection order law. But in many, and I think this is the case across the state, families who could use it don't know about it. How do we do outreach, multilingual, multicultural, to reach people who have a situation where they're a 19-year-old, a 20-year-old, They're worried about them. They have a weapon. And how can they use that extreme risk protection order? When you look at how they've been used in the, about that year and a half, 2 years since it's been the law, it's been used more by law enforcement. And when it had been designed, it had been thought it would be used more by families, particularly parents of, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. That's a lot of the age of onset of some of these psychological risk factors. And I think it needs to be better publicized to make sure that people know that that's available to them.
Thanks so much for your time, Governor. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
That was KOTO's Scott Franz speaking with Governor Jared Polis. On Monday, the governor signed two gun-related bills that were being debated before the Boulder shooting. One deals with safe storage to help reduce suicides by young people and others. The other requires gun owners to report lost or stolen weapons. Failing to do so would result in a $25 fine on the first violation. The bill's sponsors said it would help fight firearms trafficking and reduce gun violence. Republicans questioned how it would reduce gun violence if a missing weapon is already on the streets. The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for a slight chance of rain and snow showers tonight, with mostly cloudy skies and a low around 30 degrees. Thursday, expect scattered rain and snow showers with mostly cloudy skies and a high in the mid-40s. Thursday night, snow showers are likely, with a low around 25. Friday, there is a chance of rain and snow showers with partly sunny skies and a high near 45 degrees. Winds could gust as high as 30 miles per hour. Friday night calls for mostly clear skies with a low around 25 degrees. This has been the news for Wednesday, April 21st. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 728-3206. And now, a personal commentary.
We got Sarah Kimball, the principal of the high school, online. Hi, Sarah. Can you hear us?
Yep. Hi, Yvonne. Thank you. So I'm calling in for our senior spotlights tonight. We've got 5 weeks until high school graduation. So I've got five seniors that I'm going to highlight tonight. And the first one is Samantha Almany. So to start, Samantha is an avid and very accomplished fly fisher woman. But in the classroom, her teachers appreciate how she invariably steps up during class discussions and takes on a rigorous curriculum, including 8 advanced placement courses. In her sophomore year, she won the outstanding achievement in both math, in both pre-calculus and AP statistics, and so then she joined our math club as the only girl. She did not take an additional ninth AP course this year, so she could take an art class if she wants to study architecture. And last year at our annual awards ceremony, she was recognized for her outstanding performance in STEM classes and U.S. history. Next up is Landon Cassuno. Landon DeProctor Cassuno is not just a long hauler, he is the son of a long hauler. He is also an ardent hockey player and, from what I understand, a very good one. He's been a AA select player for more than 4 years. At the start of the school year, when Landon was given the chance to play hockey in Maine with the Eastern Hockey League and still be a senior at Telluride High School, he jumped at the opportunity. For a number of years, he's coached the Mites, Mini Mites, and Squirts, and he loves just about everything to do with the outdoors. In school, Landon has been transformed into a class leader, often being the one to take the initiative in group projects and class discussions. He's a true team player and will always help others be successful. Paula Gutierrez, Adriana, or Paula, she goes by both, arrived in Telluride at the end of 8th grade. She is a strong and persevering individual. It's been a privilege and a pleasure to witness continuous ability to persist in school. She has a quiet intensity, determination, and strength, and she's grown into a student that will not only take the initiative to meet teachers outside of class, but work hard in class. She is also a dedicated family and friend member. She is well-liked by students from lots of other cultures and background. Her work ethic carries over to other areas of her life in school sports, basketball, soccer, and also local restaurants. John Patrick Osborne. John Patrick is a throwback in all the good ways. He hates technology and loves his old car. He is kind, reflective, polite, and respectful. He is open-minded and progressive thinker. He loves to be outdoors, whether it be camping, hiking, hunting, river surfing, or just with the neighborhood kids. JP is a hands-on learner as a human being. He is the first to roll up his sleeves and help the members of his community or to intervene in an emergency. He has strong values. He's a true individual that has the confidence to go his own way with a smile and goodwill towards all. And last one is Lila Ranke. It's hard not to describe this dynamic young woman who has grown up relishing our mountain landscape as down to earth. Lila is an exceptional swimmer. She served as the first ever team captain of the Torpedoes and inspiring young members to give it their all. In 2019, Lila was voted Colorado Swimming Seasonal Swim Female Athlete of the Year. Academically, Lila's success tended more towards the arts and humanities. She's an avid reader and an accomplished artist. She has performed solidly in a broadly wide-ranging, rigorous curriculum, including AP classes. She's interested in pursuing a career in emergency medicine and had mentorships both with local physical therapists and an ER doc. And I have been told she's been exceptionally responsible and professional. So thanks to all our kids.
Opinions broadcast over KOTO are those of the speakers. You are also invited to express your views after the news or on Access each weekday at around 4 p.m. If you would like to comment, please contact a staff person here at KOTO. We encourage you to speak out on important public issues.